Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Okay, today our speaker is Fern Scheffler, Fern liked the plant. She's an American painter, performance artist, lecturer, and environmental advocate. Her work arose in the 1980s in conjunction with an emerging eco-feminist movement that brought together environmentalism, feminist values, and spirituality to address shared concern for the earth and all forms of life. She has been a longtime activist for women in art through her involvement and leadership at the Chicago Alternative Art Space at Artemisia Gallery and through her work with the National Women's Caucus for Art. Her ritual work was featured on the cover and written about in The Reenchantment of Art by Susie Gablick in 1991. And today she's going to share with us about the nine-year ritual, one of her works, its materials, locations, and purpose. She collaborated with Otello Anderson and was inspired by Edgar Case, Marcia Eliade, and Michael Hanna. And I'm going to let you correct me if I butchered your names. According to Susie Gablick, Scheffler's process of creating a shamanic outfit to wear can be likened to creating a cocoon or alchemical vessel, a contained place within which magical transformations can take place. The artist described the ritual in terms of energy and thought centered on the equal balance and harmony between nature, science, and spirit, connecting with the earth as a living entity whose energy can be reached and unblocked through ritual, prayer, and touch, much like acupuncture works on the human body. So if that's not got you curious, I'm not sure what will. Now I'm gonna turn the floor over to Fern and let her take us through the whole process of creating this really fascinating work. Over to you, Fern.
Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Fern Scheffler, and I may repeat a little bit of what Celine said, because that's what I'm gonna do. Is the first slide up?
I'm going to add it now.
Okay. Is it, will you tell me if it's up or?
Yes. One second.
No.
Just one second.
Okay. Okay, that's fabulous, thank you. I'm gonna read to you about this. In 1980, inspired by my interest in Edgar Casey, Marcia Eliade, and Michael Harner, and prompted by ecological concerns shared with Otello Anderson, who was my photographer. We worked together, so we view this as a collaborative piece. I began enacting self-designed shamanic rituals as a form of spiritual intervention. Anderson documented the rituals in sequential photographs that were later exhibited with elements and garments from the rituals. Feminist art critic Gloria Ornstein situated Schaefer's work as part of an emerging ecofeminist movement, describing the rituals as introducing feminist matriarchal renaissance intended to create connections and restoration in the sites and communities with when they were enacted. According to Susie Gablick, Schaefer's process of creating a shamanic outfit to wear can be likened to creating a cocoon, an alchemy vessel, a container, contained place within which magical transformation can take place. Art critic Thomas McEverly related the garments to an earth mother or fertility goddess, invoking non-Western or non-modern identities in the service of ecological concern. The artist described the rituals in terms of energy and thought centered on equal balance and harmony between nature, science, and spirit, connecting with the earth as a living entity. Energy can be reached and unblocked through ritual, prayers, and touch, just like acupuncture works on the human body. So I view the earth as a living being. This is a ritual done in 1985 when we had an ice storm in Chicago, and this is on Lake Michigan. And Susie Gablick loved this image and put it on the cover of her book, The Reenchantment of Art. Next. This is a ritual that took place in 1985, and this was in effigy mounds. This was an Indian burial ground that was being threatened by farmers enclosing on this ground. And I wanted to reach out to all the gods, and I made a costume. The costume is made from art materials, because I'm an artist, that's canvas and raffia. And in this particular one was a scene painted of the sky, because I wanted to incorporate the sky and the earth and everything together. Next. In the very beginning, when I started to do the rituals, you can go to the next one. There's three of this one. When I started to do the rituals, I just put on a costume and went out. And I put on false eyelashes and wrapped my head up into fancy things. And when I came back, I looked like the pictures came back. I looked like Louise Nevelson, and I go, "Oh no, this is not right. This is not who this is about." So from then on, I had to put my personality away also. So that's why I'm basically covered and blinded, so that I can really feel the earth. And usually I'm, naked underneath would be the simplest way to say it, so that my feet are on the ground and I can feel the earth and how I should react to it. So this was done in 1985. Go to the next one. This was about a meal offering. The forests were in fire and the world is changing. And according to some rituals, if you give them meal, the earth likes to be fed. So this was a ritual in giving back to the earth and spreading meal, cornmeal around on the earth. There's another slide that goes with this. And there I am pouring out the food for the earth. This slide is about the harmonic conversion. I don't know if you all remember that or if you were around it in 1987. And we went to Indiana where there was a nuclear compound there, and as you can see, and it was all sand. And so we were doing a ritual as to praying for this to not get out of hand. And the next one. All right, slow down a little. That was 1987. This is in 19, no, you can go back. Okay, stay here. This is 1989, and this was a ritual about fire. And in this case, we had to be very careful of where we went. And we were lucky enough to find someone who owned farmland so that we were not near trees or anything that would happen. Go to the next slide. Atello and I worked together and we shoot, we were using film. So all of this is film, digital wasn't invented yet. And we shot usually 20 rolls of film, 36 images on a roll. And from that, we would distill it down to three or four of the best photos. When the fire ring was completed, there was no more film. All the film came out totally black. So it wasn't meant to be. So we got just two pictures out of this, and this is what it was. But that was weird. Usually we make decisions about where we're going to go or how we're going to go about doing it, getting signs from the universe. Somebody will mention something and then they'll say, oh, maybe that's where we should go, or maybe that's what needs to be done. So we really didn't have anything pre-planned. It was like at the moment, or if we planned something, we knew about it, but usually not. Okay, the next one. Okay, this is a slide in Chicago of garbage dumps. If you're looking straight at it and towards the middle, towards the bottom, you'll see a rat jumping out of the garbage. And we had decided that we had not done any rituals in the city itself of Chicago, any place around here. Go to the next one. And here I made a costume out of bubble wrap and plastic. And this was the food that's thrown away. And this was the city and in the heart of the city. And rats were jumping out of the garbage thing. And in my hand, I hold the rattle made from a Diet Coke bottle filled with black glass. And here it is, and there's the city right behind me. This is what would be location in University of Illinois before they expanded, but this was before that. So that was in 1991. Now we're gonna go into the next grouping and keep it here for a moment. When we decided that we were going to commit to a deeper level, I said to Atello, we sat down and talked about this, and we thought that 9 was a healing number because in many cultures, numbers have meaning to them. And 9 years was like a full cycle. And if we committed to this, would we be able to do it? So we agreed that we would. And this was the very first one where I made a totally new costume. And the costume again is raffia, canvas. And I also put in elements because we're now leaving the 19th century going into the 21st century, I guess you would say the 20th century going to the 21st. We were leaving the industrial age going into technology. So I needed to have some objects that were from the last century, screws and nails and pieces of wire and things that were more mechanical. Go to the next one. And in doing this, we decided that we were making an announcement to the world that we were going to do a ritual that would take 9 years. And the system was going to be simple. We started in January 9th, 1995, I think it was. And every year we would go 1 month up so that we ended up on 9-9. So the numbers became important to us also. Okay, go ahead. All right, here we are. This is the second one. We were planning to do something else, but we were invited to a conference with James Hillman and Governor Brown at that time in Esalen in the Atlantic Ocean, and was like, wow, this was exactly the same day that we were committed the same time to doing this ritual. So then this ritual became about the ocean, about the Atlantic Ocean, and how we're not taking care of the water and how we have to do that. Keep it there for a minute. And because I personally like this picture a lot. It's quite beautiful. So this was the second ritual out of the 9 years. Okay, the next one. This is the Corn Belt. This is in Wisconsin. This is what's so important about our food and how they're putting chemicals into our food and it's destroying us. So we went out and found a cornmeal, a corn place where they grow the corn. And it was March and it was so cold. And these stalks of corn were like icicles. And I couldn't move very much out there because it really was containing me in a way. You can go to the next picture. And we try not to have any modern things in there. So there's timeless photographs. And as we're leaving this, I realized that I was getting sicker by the moment. Go to the next one. And I just really, oh no, go back if you can, stay there. So I said to Otello, we must stop someplace. It was about a 3-hour drive from where we lived. And the locations are depending on our finances at the time. Sometimes I'm able to write a grant and I got money to do it. Sometimes we didn't get it. But here I knew I was getting sick because I have started to absorb the chemicals that were in the ground. And we had to stop at a hotel or a motel so I could get into a hot tub and wait an hour till it was starting to come out of my system. And then I was able to go home. Go to the next one. This is on, let me just go to where we're at. This is the fourth ritual. This took place on April 9th, 1998, on the summit of a Blue Ridge Mountain in Virginia. The mountains in Virginia are being blown up. They blow off the top of a mountain, fill in a valley. That's how they get the coal. Well, that destroys all the environment and everything about it. And we, like I said, we pick a time. It's always at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's always on the 9th of that month of that year. And it was raining. And so it's kind of dangerous to be up that high because behind me is just nothing. But when we finally got there, it stopped raining for that 1 hour while we did the ritual. So that was very cool. I like when the gods help us along. So this was in Virginia at the Appalachia Mountains.
Hi, Fern.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could also share with us, if you remember, your experience of the ritual at the time, your personal experience of the time.
What usually happens to me is that I'm just totally withdrawn into what I'm doing because I am almost in a trance. I'm in another place because I'm able to do this without fear, without worrying about anything. And I don't plan a routine or a dance. It's what I feel at the moment. So I am connected to an unconscious kind of worldness about it. It's very hard to put into words because all the words, I don't have enough vocabulary to describe what happens, but I'm truly quite happy in there. It really is wonderful.
I wish I could have seen it with my own eyes.
Yes.
It must have been wonderful.
It was.
You don't have any videos, do you?
I only have film. I didn't like video because I don't like video. And at that time, film is just so much different than video. Today it's much different. And in fact, I am thinking very strongly about actually doing a video of a ritual because we need to continue to do it because the earth is not doing any better. You know, especially in the United States. Wow, it's really changing. All right, and go to the next one. This is one that I knew that I had to be. This is Death Valley. And this is 1999 before we changed the century. And I was able to get a grant. So we were able to fly out, rent a car. And then we drove around Death Valley till we found a spot that's sacred. In all of the places that I go, I forgot to mention that, is we go to a location and we don't know exactly where we're going to be or how we're going to do the ritual. So we have to spend time till something actually feels sacred to me. And when it feels sacred, it comes out very loudly and says, oh, this is where we should be. This was Death Valley. This felt as close to death as I think you could feel. And it was May in, what year are we at? Okay. May 9th, 1999. It was, again, totally fascinating being there. The getting ready for it, the meditation before, using the sage to clean the land of the spirits and to make sure that it was clear. And I never knew if we had an audience or if anybody showed up. Sometimes they do, but Atello was protecting me in a way. They didn't come and bother me or talk to me at all because they would have broken the trance that I was in a way. So I didn't have to deal with people. If I like people, so I like to talk to them. So I would be very distracted if I was in with an audience. So this is why this works best for us. Okay. Next. This was a place that we heard about. This is in Canada and an old growth forest. Sometimes we get an idea and it's not what we can do. I wanted to go to California to the great, wonderful redwood trees that are hundreds of years old, but it was too difficult financially to get to California. We went up to Canada because this is also an old growth forest. And the thing that I learned, many things, that you don't go up to Canada in June during mosquito and black fly weather. There are just tons of black flies and mosquitoes. These trees behind me are hundreds of years old because in Canada, the growing season is 6 weeks. So in 6 weeks, they can only put on a thin layer. And if you were to cut them, you'd be able to see them. But in California, it's warm and hot all the time. The trees grew the size of houses, but here they were very narrow. We went to Lake Temagami and we were brought there on a boat with a map. And I was very nervous about being left in some place I didn't know how to get away from. I made the driver of the boat wait for us, because I didn't know how we'd get off the island. And we were covered in mosquitoes and black flies. Atello's camera had millions of mosquitoes on it. So it was a very difficult one to deal with, but so be it. I would go to okay. You can go to the next one. This is I wanted to do a ritual having to do with all the waters and the rivers, because we acknowledge the Atlantic Ocean. And so this is the headwaters of the Mississippi River. It starts here. It's the most amazing thing. And the waters are so important to our whole world. So this is a ritual to protect the waters and admire them and take them. This took place in July 9th, 2001. And it was, you know, it's beautiful. So this is the beginning of the Mississippi River. This is in Newfoundland, because now I wanted to go as far east as I possibly could to give a prayer and ritual for the Pacific Ocean. We have overfished the oceans. We are throwing garbage in the oceans. It really needs to pay attention in all of the rituals. And we do is to bring attention. The photographs become a memory of the ritual, because we just can't all go there and do it together, which would be nice. But so this is in Newfoundland. This is a place where usually I'm okay. I can handle the weight. The whole weight of the costume is about 75 pounds, and it fits me and it's great. I slipped in the rocks and I could not get my foot out between some of the rocks. And I tried to get Atello's attention because I needed help. If I was to fall down, I was sure that I would break my leg. So eventually he realized that I was in stress. So he came over and he helped me to move my foot out of the rocks. And I found a flatter place to stand and it was okay. But I was a little worried with that particular ritual. And that was in Newfoundland. I loved being up there. It was just an interesting place to be. And wish I could have spent more time. That was on August 9th, 2002. Then the last ritual is this one. This was a ritual I wanted to do in a swampland. And I didn't know how we could get to Florida, to the Everglades, to do it there. But again, it was like a 5-day drive, 5-day back. It was just too difficult. So we went exploring, and I found that the Cache River was a swamp in southern Illinois, almost near Kentucky. So we went there and we discovered this paradise inside farmland. They had been draining the swamps constantly. Leave this up for a minute. And so this tree is hundreds and hundreds of years old. And the Cache River Basin is swampland that even goes all the way up into Louisiana and to places where they get hurricanes. The swampland helps the cities that get the hurricanes because it's able to drain some of the energy. And it's so funny that all they want to do is just drain them. But it's important to the ecological world that we live in. And when I saw this, and there were signs up, do not kill the snakes. So I said to Atello, I want to go in. I need to go into the swamp. So we need to go to Walmart so I can get some boots, because I'm not going in barefooted, because I didn't want to step on anything I wasn't going to be happy with. So we got boots and we went there, and this is a very complicated story. So I put them on and we took these fabulous pictures, but my car died. And so it was a very difficult kind of situation because it's a very, very southern town. And Atello was black. So now we're in an area which is not conducive to him. But I had to tow my car 100 miles And we went into a dealership, which said that the engine was totally ruined. And I had to buy a new car while there and drive home because we had all this equipment and we had everything in the car. So that was always very memorable. So I had to buy a car at this point. And I think there's another one left in here. Is this the last one? There it is. When I got home, I was able to hang my studio, in my studio, my costume, because it was quite wet and it was filled with all the dirt and the stuff inside the swamp. It took a year for it to dry. It just hung in the studio between two ladders on a board. And I really enjoyed it as the dirt fell down in the studio. I swept it up because it kept me connected to the swamp. All right. Now, I'm open for questions or you need more things, that would be great. Do I look on here? Let me see if I can find.
Yes. Okay. There are a couple of questions coming in.
Okay.
So should I read them to you?
Yeah, that would be fine. And I have two.
I can't say, Joyality team. The question is, I am a dancer and a facilitator of a youth leadership training in climate resilience. We are working with a youth theater group and a group of 14 to 20 year olds who identify as leaders concerned about climate change. I am curious about your title, Performance and Ritual Works. How do you see your work working for positive change?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. Anything you do that involves your energy and your thought, that is positive, unless it's for evil. I'm not that way. I'm there really for improving something. If you're thinking negative, things around you pick that up. If you're thinking positive, everybody around you picks that up. You know, that's just the way nature is. I do think it's incredible. The rituals, I've gone back to some of the sites that we did rituals on to see what happened to the land or if the land was continually encroached on, but it wasn't. Like in the Effigy Mounds, the farmers stopped. They didn't keep going in and taking more land. In other places, the swamp is still there. So the garbage dump is gone. So that was an improvement. And they built some new building and housing for students in the University of Illinois. I think that there is things when you do positive in the world, you plant. A simple thing of putting flowers in your garden brings beauty to the rest of the world. I mean, I think that we all need to chip in and do things like that. And not huge, but little things, and they add up.
Thank you. And the second question we have, can you describe in more detail what you mean exactly by ritual? In your experience, how is ritual different than performance?
Oh, performance is usually with an audience. I don't have an audience. I can talk about it now, but I don't go on stage and put on a performance. So to me, a ritual is things that you do over and over again. And I try to calm myself down as much as I can. We do meditation before I go into the ritual so that I've cleared my head of any things and negative thoughts. And I basically go away. I don't know how else to explain it. Fern, who loves people, wants to talk and carry on, goes away. And when I meditate, my friends always say, Fern gets into a rocket and she's gone. And that's true. So I just am gone. I can't tell you where I've been or what it is. Other people meditate, they go to the forest or they're sitting under trees or I'm just gone. So I don't know what else to tell you, but it's important that I align myself with the earth. You know, you align yourself with the energy and you let that take over yourself and move and do what you need to do. I don't always tell you that I have a plan. I do 6 steps this way or 7 steps that way. Sometimes the earth needs to be awakened. So I will stamp on my feet and say, get up. You need to protect yourself. You know how to do that. Or if it's very, very damaged, I'm very gentle because I can see that the earth can't stand to be yelled at or jumped on or something. So I become sensitive to what's around me, the weather, the people, the environment.
It sounds from what you were just saying that you can feel the different spaces of the locations you go to, speaking to you, communicating with you.
Yes. I can.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I do. In one of the people that I referred to, Iliade, he's a fabulous book, but he wrote a book about sacred spaces. An example would be in Europe, or like, it was very, how do I say it? A girl was raped on this spot, maybe a child. And when he came to find out about it, he felt that this was a very sacred land. This situation had caused a sacrifice, and they built a church there. Somehow he knew that that was what was needed to build a church. This is where a church had to go. There are people pick up these things. There are things that you will come by and see. I mean, one of my friends had a gorgeous backyard, and it was so sacred and so beautiful, just the way she built it. So we can pick them in other places you've gone to, and you go, ooh, get me out of here. This feels creepy. So yes, so I think we all are sensitive to that, but it's just a matter of paying attention.
And you mentioned that you have a meditation practice.
Yes.
Is that something that you do regularly, regardless of whether or not you are doing the ritual? And
yes.
Can you speak a bit more about how it informs your work?
I try to meditate every day, half hour, hour, whatever I can. I have friends that we like to meditate together. I will do that. I work with the elderly. That's my job. And I'm talking about Holocaust survivors, and these elderly are 90s to 100 years old. And I have do a meditation with them. We sit around in a circle and we calm ourselves and meditate for a half hour and then go on. So if I can do it, and I'm not perfect. Some days I don't get to do it. Sometimes it's a month, depending on how busy I am or what's going on, but I try to. So
it's like you're only human, right?
You know, this is what we have to do.
And I'll be really interested to find out if you felt like in any of the rituals, or maybe even all of them, did the elements have messages for you? Whether, you know, it may not be messages like the way we speak right now, but yeah. Did you get a sense of some communication?
Yes, I did always. When I walked into the swamp, it was like a gift from God. It was so sacred and so beautiful in there. It was like unbelievable. And all I could say was, thank you. This was really a gift. I never would have thought that I would have found anything like that. When I went to Virginia and climbed up on the top of the mountain, it was also another gift. A lot of it is gifts to me that I feel like, oh, wow. And I'm protected because I didn't fall down. I didn't hurt myself. I wasn't attacked. You know, in the beginning, when we first started, and we would go to different places that were, in a sense, dangerous. There was a, when they dig up for rocks and they take things out of the earth, and so it was very deep, and so we went down into it, but there were workers there, and so they got their guns out because they didn't know what I was. They thought I was an animal of some sort, you know, and so we had to do some talking. We backtracked out of there. That was not, we didn't take pictures. It was just like, this is the wrong place. We got to go. So we did. So in a sense, yes, the earth does tell you and warns you, you know, this is not good. This is very slippery. You can fall down. In the ice one, it was, we took pictures when in the very beginning, first one I showed you, it was so cold. It was like almost 8-10 degrees below zero, because Chicago can get that a while ago. We haven't been there recently. The film split. It was so cold that the film just split in the camera. So we only got a few shots. Instead of having 20 rolls of film, we didn't. So yes, we have to work with what we have.
I guess it would have been helpful to have known the Wim Hof. Do you know about the Wim Hof breathing method where he regulates his body temperature and climbs mountains just wearing a t-shirt?
I that would have been good, but I don't know all this other stuff.
How did you regulate your temperature then? Were you all bundled up underneath your costume?
No, usually not. The one that was in Wisconsin, I was very sick from actually the chemicals that were in the ground. It was very cold. No, we're okay with that. The costume weighs a lot, so there's so many layers of raffia and canvas. It's like wrapping, you know, pounds of that around you. So I'm not cold. And in the very hot weather, it wasn't too bad because I'm moving around. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. Or I didn't feel it. Or I don't even remember it. All of the above.
You were just so immersed.
Yeah, right. I was just in the midst of it.
And right now I see that Steph has asked, do you feel the ritual you do is informed by indigenous or religious backgrounds? Or do you feel it is more personal and purely influenced by the land?
I think it's everything. Let's go back to third, fourth grade when I saw National Geographics. You know, as a child, we did our homework. We could go and look at the magazines, and they were just so fascinating to me. The African culture was so fascinating to me. So do I feel like other indigenous groups influenced me? Yes, they all did. One way or another. And I studied the Indian culture. I loved the Indian dances and the way that they did things. I did. I can't help it. My own culture has a lot of rituals, but not like the way that I do it. You know, no one has costumes and stuff to put on. Other industries or other people do. But I am influenced by that. Because I believe that we're all interconnected. Everything is interconnected. I mean, you interconnect with the world, you interconnect with the animals, with the people, the weather. Everything is interconnected.
And I wonder how personally you have been changed by the work of doing the 9-year ritual. Can you speak to that, please?
Yes. How about my son? I was married and have 3 kids and 6 grandchildren, so all that. So my son writes to me, he says, you know, Mom, since you haven't done a ritual in a few years, you know, the earth is not doing so well. So I said, gee, I hadn't thought about that. I think maybe you're right, that maybe I should go back and to do this. And then I thought about it, and I was excited that he stimulated me to do that. And I hired a videographer. So within the next year, I will do something. I haven't decided how I'm going to do it or where, but I am going to make a film of it. So that will be the future. And am I changed by it? You know, I go to work all the time, and I'm working with elderly people. And there's some difficult people, I have to tell you. In this world, but I always felt that I didn't have to be affected by it because I had another part of me that did world work. And so that kept me feeling whole, and I didn't have to deal with a lot of personality problems because I have this other side of me that was contributing to the world. And that's what I really want to do. So even in my work, I'm contributing, but that's something special.
Are there any other artists or writers or performers or environmental activists and advocates that you'd like to collaborate with?
There would be. I just have never met them. When it's a committee, a
chance to reach out to them through the platform.
Yeah, it's a good time to do that.
Tell us who they are.
Yeah, we certainly could collaborate. There's no problem. My photographer doesn't work anymore, so I kind of stopped doing it because he understood very much, and we just worked so well together. We worked together almost 30 years. So I had thought that that was the end, but now I'm beginning to think something different. So yeah, it's a very good chance. I once did a ritual after the 9-year ritual, and I invited maybe 15, 20 friends. And I said, bring your camera. This time we're going to do a ritual, not with one camera, but with all of your cameras. And then we'll put it together like a collage in my head, right? I got to tell you that no one ended up taking pictures because they couldn't pay attention to the pictures and watching me. Okay. They were just like, they didn't know what to do. So it didn't, that idea just didn't turn out. But that was one idea. I thought it would be, people would be shooting from all different places and it would be interesting, but I was wrong. So that didn't work as well. So I hope, you know, maybe the videographer seems enthusiastic. We'll see what happens.
It's interesting. I have a question that I think one of the participants also has. So let me read it out to you.
Okay.
Do you have a specific intention when going into the different environments?
Yes, of course. If you make an intention in any ritual that you do or anything that you do, I want to acknowledge that this swampland is really important. It's really important for the world to understand that we can't destroy everything because you don't know what it's there for. So I feel that if I go to the sacred ground, the Indian grounds, I knew I was had to step lightly because this was ground that it was sacred to lots of people, but the farmers were encroaching on it. So they were taking it away from them. So my intention was to make this, encourage the earth to keep itself sacred. You know, it's hard to say, how can you do that? I don't know. But I'll give you a wonderful piece of advice that I learned a whole long time ago, and it has to do with interrelationship with people. If you're dealing with somebody that you don't like, you have to find something about them that you like, whether it's, oh, she's got beautiful hair, she has a shirt that's nice, and you keep that in your brain because everyone feels the hate. Everybody feels the dislike. And if you want to bridge that, you must concentrate about what it is that's good. You know, at times I've been mad at my mother. I mean, we all have been mad at our mother. She didn't let me do what I wanted to do. And I would say to myself, but she can bowl. She knows how to bowl. So I kept that in my brain so that I, you know, she wouldn't feel my resentment towards her or hate towards her. It's just a wonderful way to get through life.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Yes. I'm just going to make a few announcements now as we come to the top of the hour, and then I will get back to you to ask you for your top tip for staying embodied. Okay, so you can have a little think about it, right? And I just wanted to let everyone know that this video will be available for free for the next 48 hours. It might take a couple of hours for us to edit and upload it. So please be patient. Everyone is running on full steam and a lot of us are volunteers. And if you have missed something else earlier in the conference that you'd like to get back to. We ask that you consider investing in the recordings package. You can get either the channel or the entire library, and you have lifetime access to it. You get the PDF notes. You'll get audio versions if you don't want to watch the video and just want to listen to it.
Oh, no.
You can also interact with people after this session by going to the coffee break room on the portal. If you go to the top right-hand corner of the portal website and click on it, you'll see coffee break. And that's where other participants and sometimes the speakers will drop in between sessions, and they can have chats and further discussions. You can also stay connected on Facebook through the Embodiment Group Facebook page, as well as the Ecology and Research Track group page. And I think Alina has posted all the links in the chat. And if you want to continue learning more about Fern's work on her website fernscheffer.com is there as well. Oh, I think with her husband. Anyway, she's like, and let's see if we have any other announcements. If you scroll right to the top of our chat, you'll see the link for our sponsor, our charity that we're sponsoring, Forests Without Frontiers. If you would like to make a donation to them, you're very welcome to. And now I'd like to get back to Fern and see if you have any last words for us. And perhaps I encourage you to let us know as well who you would like to collaborate with, which artists or environmental activists, because this the Embodiment Conference is going out to so many people around the world. And if people would like to get in touch with you, they can through this.
Yeah, oh, please do. Do you want my email address?
Yes, you can put it in the chat if you want.
How do I do that? Do you want to just...
Oh, you can read it out as well and we'll type it in for you.
Okay, it's FJ Schaffer, S-H-A-F-F-E-R, @gmail.com. FJ Schaffer @gmail.com. Right. That's... Oh, it's FJ, not G. F... J like Jack. Yes. Yes. I would love to hear from people. And that would be great. I love that this is an all over the world thing. And that I'm very excited about. And I was very gracious that and happy that they let me come in, because I'm not normal like the rest of the people in this conference. I don't have a yoga practice. I don't have, therapy work. This is what I do.
You're so modest. We do have an entire track on meditation and breath work. So I think you fit in perfectly with us.
You are so sweet. Thank you.
Can you share with us your top tip for staying embodied? Can you share with us one top tip you have for becoming more embodied?
One tip about being embodied. Just do it. Just if you have the thought, just do it. If you want to do something, do it. But of course within reason. I don't want you to go out and hurt anybody, but if you think you can do something, you do. If you want to sing, you go outside and sing. I believe that we can do it. You will attract those people to you. It's great. So I thank you so much for all your help, all of you. I'm so appreciative of that.
And thank you. Thank you for sharing with us and going back through the different years and the memories and telling us all the really interesting adventures and mishaps that you avoided as well. And I see some thank yous coming in the chat.
Are they?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting for people to maybe vicariously experience your experience of being out in the elements. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Being in connection.
It's great. You could just go outside and and meditate or just do something. I believe in planting, so I'm really all for planting trees. I think that's the greatest thing we could do. And they just came out with it on my website, where you would say I'm a painter besides, so I paint. And for a very long time, I painted healing plants. So that was also very, very interesting to me, heating plants. And the other thing that I'm very interested in now is time. And a friend of mine told me, because he's a guru, and that in the East, they celebrate full moons, not years. So he's celebrating 1,000 full moons, which is almost 80 years. So I thought that was just an incredible thought. It doesn't leave my mind. So now I've been starting to paint, if you see, in my room, moons. So I'm going to try and paint 1,000 moons before I'm 80 years old, so that I could see what it would look like to have that much time before you. I mean, so.
What's your age right now?
I'm 76.
All right, so 4 more years. Yeah. 4 years, 2 moons.
Right. Right, so I think, you know, that's an idea that came to me also, so.
Okay, we look forward to your new work then.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ren. And thank you everyone who joined us today. Thank you for your presence and your questions. And thank you, Alina, for running the tech for us today.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So
I'm just gonna announce the next session.
Okay. Let's see. Should I leave now?
You can if you like to. So okay. Our next session is in an hour. And it's going to be involving some movement practices.
All right, I'm still here. Do you hear me? Oh yeah, you do. Was that okay? Was the presentation okay?
Yes, yes, you're still on camera. So I'm just gonna say to everyone, if you'd like to join us in 1 hour, the next session is called The Spiritual, The Ecological, and The Pleasurable. From Cultural Aversion to Collective Embodiment, a Movement and Ideas Workshop. And it's going to be presented by Dr. Maya Ward. There will be some writing and movement practices as well as a short presentation. And now we're going to actually close out the room and so that you can go get some water, go to the bathroom, get some food and go for a walk or stretch and come back again in an hour if you'd like to join the next session. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good day or good night wherever you are in the world. Thank you, friend.
Thank you.